Hi, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Singeri in for Bob Kinzel. Whether it's sinking into a comfy movie theater seat, rolling into the drive-in, lounging on your couch or perching in front of your computer, there is something special about movie watching. There's that anticipation of what is about to happen when the opening credits roll. The excitement as the story builds, and then as the movie wraps, determining if you liked what you saw or if you even understood the film. I've been left with that last thought numerous times. But it is rare that I regret having spent the time to watch a film. Today, it's time to talk movies. Joining me are Margo Harrison, a film reviewer and associate editor for 7 Days, and Mark Herney, who podcasts at CriterionCast.com and is a member of the Vermont International Film Foundation. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank
you. Glad to be here.
Happy to be here.
Margo, first of all, what got you interested in film?
I've really been interested in film almost as far back as I can remember. I think maybe it was when I was 8 and saw Star Wars for the first time, and I couldn't believe it. I was seeing something like that on a screen. It brought me into a new world, and my interests have expanded a lot since then beyond science fiction and blockbusters. But I think that's what initially did it for me.
How about you, Mark?
It's funny, I started the same place that Margo did. I started with Star Wars. I won't mention what age it was, but that was just a transformative experience for me and was always a movie fan. But I really didn't become a true, what I would call a cinephile, until I was introduced to a French movie from the French New Wave, Jules and Jim. Mm. And that just expanded my horizons to realize that this art form really combines many different art forms together. And I've always considered myself a music fan, but this art form of film is something that combines the visual with the auditory medium and the writing, and it's just really a piece of work.
Now, don't carbon date me, but the films that really got me interested, they were not when they were originally released, with the Marx Brothers films. That just sucked me in, and I knew movies could be something wonderful. So you mentioned, you know, science fiction got you started, Margo, but is there a genre or a type that even the sorriest of those films still bring you some joy?
That would be horror.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, I am a big horror fan. I mean, I really like indie movies, too, in general. But I think indie horror, kind of edgy, cerebral horror films that take some risks and go to some strange places are really my favorites.
Oh, throw one out that takes us to some strange places, takes risks.
Well, this year it would definitely be Hereditary, mm-hmm. the first movie from writer-director Ari Aster. And this is a movie that I really couldn't recommend to most of my friends because it's pretty disturbing.
Yep, I hated it. But go ahead. No, I know you loved it. I knew we would disagree on this, but that's okay.
Yes, I think.
Yeah.
This is a movie for a niche audience, yep. No doubt about it. But it combines horror with psychodrama.
Yes, it does.
And I think the performance from Toni Collette in the lead role of a mother or a woman mourning her estranged mother is really an extraordinary performance by any standards.
I agree. She Absolutely. Could act the phone book for me, and I would love her. So how about you? What's your genre, Mark? Where's your soft spot?
I think Margo and I are in lockstep.
Now,
I would say that my favorite is still science fiction, which goes back to Star Wars and 2001, A Space Odyssey has been my favorite film since I was very young. But I love good genre films like good horror movies. So taking something like Hereditary this year was just really, to me, was the best horror movie I'd seen since some of the really in the past 2 or 3 years with like The Babadook and The Witch from David Eggers. The interesting thing with those films is we're seeing them from new filmmakers.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it is science fiction, which had one of my favorite films of the year in Annihilation. From director Alex Garland, starred Natalie Portman, Oscar Isaacs. It was an early film that it came out earlier this year. It is available for streaming currently, and really was a mix of the science fiction and horror. So, you know,
explain a little bit about that one. That one is kind of interesting. Again, not one that I really enjoyed, but I'm glad I watched. I'd like to be exposed to different things and explain the kind of concept of this, because it is a pretty interesting film.
It's very heady. So it's a mix of many different different films, you could see a lot of the influences, like The Thing, 2001, Alien. It really is about an alien that comes to Earth and starts to change a small area in it. And we have two groups of characters. We have, it's interesting, the dynamic, because we have a group of men that first go in, and then a group of women are the group that we truly follow within this this group. And we see what happens to them, how they are changed as a group, how they are changed as people. And it is very, it's visceral. There are definitely some horror elements to it, but it's a heady film with a climax that to me was really speaks to what I took away was depression, maybe dealing with grief in the way that that film unfolds towards the end. Yeah. So
that's fair. Let's take a call. Brian is calling from Charlotte. Brian, go right ahead. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so my favorite movie of all time, I would have to say, is Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, and it's synced with Led Zeppelin album 4. It's kind of like the Pink Floyd and Wizard of Oz thing. Way better.
Your thoughts on that, either of you? Syncing it with Led Zeppelin?
I've never tried that. And I wonder if that's the theatrical or the extended edition. I'm definitely a big fan. I think Lord of the Rings was really set the bar high for fantasy films and epic films when it came out going forward.
All right, I want to read a few notes we've got from people already. John in Bridgewater Corners said, I love the Christmas Chronicles on Netflix. I'm 71 years old, but still got swept up in the just plain fun of the movie. Highly recommend it for any age, especially kids and big kids like me. And Catherine, who also writes, I have seen a few great movies lately, Free Solo at the Roxy in Burlington, The Christmas Chronicles, Christopher Robin, and The Little Mermaid on Netflix. Mm-hmm. The last three are great family watching with a 12-year-old and 14-year-old. So that is a concern sometimes, taking the whole family, making sure films are suitable for the kids that you take along, or, you know, even your kind of older children that you feel comfortable watching. So how about some family films? Any you want to throw out that you really like? Go ahead, Margo.
Well, in theaters right now, Ralph Breaks the Internet is one that I really enjoyed. It's the sequel to Disney's Wreck-It Ralph, which I thought was great. The main characters are digitized characters in arcade video games, vintage video games. And in this movie, they explore the internet. There's a little bit of something for everybody in this movie. I mean, it really does satirize internet culture, and you kind of have to have a certain familiarity with it to understand what's going on. But it makes some pithy comments. There's some satire of Disney princesses in there, a little bit of products energy. But I found it really fun.
My brother, who is 60, just took his granddaughter, who is 4 and who is a Disney princess herself, to see that, and they both gave it thumbs up. So how about you, Mark? Family friendly?
I would say I'm going to go a little bit older. My kids are early teens, and so we really enjoyed Won't You Be My Neighbor. It's rated PG-13, so if you have kids that are a little bit older, this is, to me, it's a film that just filled me with joy. I had that really elated feeling coming out of that film.
This is the Mr. Rogers film.
Yes. And, it's a documentary.
And from Middlebury, our Francois Clemens plays a part in that. Well, I mean, he's not in it himself, but there's a character based on him. He was in the early days of Mr. Rogers, and we had him on as the movie came out here.
It's amazing.
So, you have another one, Mark?
I mean, as far as family films, another one that it's rated PG that I think has kind of gone under the radar a bit is Leave No Trace from director Deborah Granick. Did play at the Roxy. She directed Winter's Bone, and it is one of the themes that I picked up from this year is PTSD, and I think this film is the one that probably deals with that the most directly. So it is certainly a little bit darker, but also uplifting. It's really about the relationship between a father and daughter. So that is definitely one that I would recommend. Probably the most humanist film that I saw this year, other than, you know, Won't You Be My Neighbor.
One thing we should talk about, I wonder, are people still going to the theater to see movies? We've had VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, and now streaming. So, you know, going to the theater, that experience has really taken salvos through the last several decades. How much has that taken a toll on people going to theaters? Margo?
It definitely has made a difference. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but we are seeing a real difference in the types of movies that are getting released and distributed into theaters. When I started doing this about 10 years ago, there were a lot of romantic comedies and thrillers in theaters, for instance. Now there are very few, because most of those slots are taken up by big blockbuster or franchise movies that have a very wide audience.
Wow. Are you seeing the same thing, Mark? Is that a trend we'll see for a long time, just to get people into the theaters?
I think so. But it is a struggle that the industry has dealt with, I think, for decades. When you look back, you think of, you know, how are we going to get people into seats? And there was the advent of 3D. There was the advent of widescreen, of Technicolor. So, and we had the 3D craze come back again a few years ago. So how do we get people to the theater, especially when you have the simulcast of a film that is on streaming and it's also in theaters at the same time? So I think one of the ways is with maybe a subscription service. If the theaters themselves would offer a subscription service similar to MoviePass, but it's a direct subscription service. You pay a monthly fee and you can see as many movies as you want, or it's limited. Could be one option, but it's hard to take people away, I think, from the comfort of your home. You can pause the movie and, you know, go get a drink, go get a snack whenever you want, you know, not have to pay those high prices. But there is something to be said just about the communal aspect of being in that film, hearing the reactions of your audience members, and that will color how you feel about a film, I think.
I remember going to see Memento down in Miami years ago, and thought I would probably be the only person in the theater. And it was jam-packed. And that was not a blockbuster film by any imagination. I was really surprised. I'm sure if it showed today, I'd probably be one of maybe three. The three of us might be sitting there watching it together. You brought up MoviePass. Came out with a lot of fanfare last year, early this year. Hit some bumps. So tell us briefly, you know, what it is and why it's having problems.
I think MoviePass first came out at $30 a month. You could see one movie a day. So you could see, say, up to 30 movies a month. And then last year, they dropped the price to $10 a month. And, of course, questions of how is that sustainable? You know, if I can see 30 movies a month, that is much more than the $10 that I'm spending. So over the course of the year, we saw really a decline in the changes of how MoviePass could administer the how you could actually see movies, the app, and really found that in September they throttled it back, one, that you could only see three movies a month, and also they were controlling the movies that you could choose from at that time. So that's really when I got out, because I was finding that I couldn't see, especially here living in Vermont, we do have limited options. I couldn't see the films that I wanted to. They're still going, but they did influence other theaters. As I was mentioning before, like AMC has a program where you can see three movies a week, and I think you pay like $20 a month. So that seems much more sustainable. They're the ones who are providing the service, and you're paying them directly rather than MoviePass having to pay the theaters themselves for every movie that you go see.
How many movies would you say you see in a year, Margo?
Wow. Well, I see one every week in the theater to review it. That's almost always in a theater. And I would say maybe total 70, 80.
How about you, Mark?
I see a lot of films, a lot of classic films, art house films too. So probably two a week.
Wow. So that's
about,
over 100.
About 100.
Yeah. All right. Let's take another call. We've got Jackson on the line from Braintree. Jackson, thanks for calling Vermont Edition. Go right ahead.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to recommend Dunkirk as one of the best films I've seen in the theater, probably in the last 12 months. Christopher Nolan's created a masterpiece that really plays with time and narrative, and the sound design is incredible. I think it's a film that's going to be taught in film school probably for years to come.
And I believe that's the same director as Memento, correct?
That's correct.
How many stars did you give it, Margo?
I actually have not seen Dunkirk yet. Memento is one of my favorite movies, so I clearly need to.
Oh, yeah. You did see Dunkirk.
It's actually my favorite film of last year.
Yeah.
I'd give it, 4.5 stars.
We're taking a look at some of the best movies of the year, some old favorites, some disappointments, and at trends in the movie biz. With me are Mark Herney, who podcasts at CriterionCast.com, and Margot Harrison, a film reviewer and associate editor for 7 Days. Okay, let's start again with throwing out another one. Give me a pick, Mark. It's your turn.
All right. So I feel like I need to mention a film that I saw at the Vermont International Film Festival this year in October. It's the biggest film event in this area and is really, really great. I saw a film called The Guilty. This is a movie that is streaming now. It's available for rental. It's from Denmark and is by a director named Gustav Mahler. It really is. It's a single location film that in and of itself just sucks me in. If folks have seen the film Lock from a couple of years ago with Tom Hardy, this is similar to that. And it takes place within an emergency call center. And it's all you can focus on in this film are the faces and the conversations. And it really is so suspenseful within that. You would think that doesn't really create suspense, but it does based on what you're hearing on the other line. And the film's really about the judgments that we perceive and watching things from afar.
And Locke was a gentleman driving in his car talking on a cell phone with his life kind of falling apart. Unbelievable one-man film from several years ago. How about you?
One of my favorite movies this year was First Reformed, which is something that I had to catch up on streaming because it actually didn't really play long in Burlington, but you can find it streaming now. And this is a movie directed and written by Paul Schrader, the guy who wrote Taxi Driver. And I think he's really back on his game with this very compelling, disturbing film about a pastor played by Ethan Hawke in a small upstate New York town who is having a crisis of faith that is related to his parishioners' depression about climate change. And that may sound like a preachy film when I describe it that way, but it really is not. It's asking the questions in a very poignant way with some great filmmaking and amazing soundtrack. I just found it riveting.
Oh, I'm glad to hear both of you mention those films. They're both on my list to see, and they both got thumbs up from you. I do want to talk about film festivals because they have been growing. There's more and more. And when I get that the flyer that tells me all the films, I'm kind of overwhelmed and never quite sure which ones I should see. So give me some tips. Like, how does a person, you know, take all these films they've never heard of, mostly. I mean, they're small independent films, foreign films, whatever they might be, and choose ones that would really be good choices for them. You first, Margot.
Well, usually I just go through the program and Google the titles or the filmmakers because often these movies have played at other film festivals. Maybe they were at Cannes or something smaller. And I often find reviews from there that tell me that this is something special. Like one at the Vermont International Film Festival was Border. And once I had read some reviews of that, I knew that I was going to be interested in seeing it.
And how about you?
Same kind of concept. I really take I like the hard copy, the paper copy of the schedule, and I'll just go through and circle the films that I really want to see and kind of plan my day. And I certainly use IMDb to get a sense of, is there a director that I'm interested in? This year was the latest from Jafar Panahi that really is not coming to theaters until next year. But within the film festival community, you can often see it earlier.
Now, I do love reading reviews, but I pick and choose. I definitely read the 4- and 5-star reviews. The 2s and 3s, it depends on the subject matter. But the 1- or no-star reviews are my favorites. I can't wait to know what makes a film so utterly bad. Margot, what must a film do to score so low?
You know, with me, I kind of it's often the number of times that I roll my eyes while I'm watching a movie. it's a little subjective that way.
But how many eye rolls to get a 1-star?
About 5 or 6, maybe.
Do you take any great pleasure in panning a film when it's so heinous? Tell me yes.
I kind of do, yes. I admit that I do. Sometimes I feel a little bit guilty about it. But if I know that it's something that it is going to have an audience and it's going to make some money, I don't really feel guilty about that.
I got you. Mark, are there any films from this past year that scored pretty low with you?
I feel like I am – I have an embarrassment of riches because I just don't go to see films that are bad. And maybe that's because I'm reading reviews ahead of time. So I'm more disappointed than actually seeing a bad film. I was disappointed by Solo, the Star Wars offshoot, just in that it was fine. There was nothing special about it. Really didn't add anything to the character. And really some of the – I do have a bit of Marvel fatigue, so I'm enjoying the films as I see movies like Avengers Infinity War and Black Panther. I think Black Panther was the best of those because of the film itself was very enjoyable but is reaching a new audience and is a really important film this year.
Margo, I think you gave The Nun a star and a half is one of your bad reviews of the year. But what were some other bad ones for you this year?
Truth or Dare was another not very good horror film. Death Wish was a movie I really did not enjoy. Remake of the famous Vigilante movie did not need to happen. 50 Shades Freed was another movie I really didn't feel like I needed to see. I realize these movies, they've got their audiences.
Say
they
no
have their fans.
Well, I'll tell you one that really disappointed me. I had read the book years ago, and it's a great baseball story. The catcher was a spy. Paul Rudd starred as Mo Berg, who played for the Boston Red Sox, true story, and was a spy for the U.S. government. And it was one of the most boring films I had to sit through. I really wish I could have those 2 hours back.
How many eye rolls?
I lost count. And in the first half hour, I lost count. So it wasn't a great one. All right. Let's take another call. We've got Gordon calling from Westminster West. Hi, Gordon. Go right ahead.
Hello. I'm calling about the beauty of going to an old historic movie theater to see a movie and what an all-encompassing experience it is. I've been on the board of the Latches Arts, the board that oversees the programming at the Latches Theater in Brattleboro, Vermont. And it's an historic theater built 80 years ago. And to go into that theater with the grand murals from Greek mythology and to see a contemporary movie is an all-encompassing experience.
Ah, Gordon, that is great. Thank you for sharing that. Let's also talk to Nessa, who's calling from Reigate Corner. Hi, Nessa. Go right ahead. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi. I wanted to address the point about why theater attendance has been declining. And for myself, I first stopped going to the theater when multiplexes came in and you were distracted by the sounds of the movie next door. But the most important reason why I stopped going to the theater is because of audience behavior. At some particular point, it became socially acceptable to talk back to the screen, to comment on the plot, to exhort the characters, and I kept losing good lines and interrupted my movie experience.
Fair
so
point,
I think
Nessa.
Audiences are somewhat to blame.
All right. Excellent point. Boy, I remember when in multiplexes you had Earthquake in Sensoround playing next door. It would certainly make what you were watching in your little theater hard to see. Back in my hometown of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, we had the Boyd Theater and remained a large screen, one screen theater for years, up until about 5 years ago. And whenever I went home, I'd watch whatever was showing. It was probably about 750 seats plus the balcony. It was phenomenal to see a film there. Are there great places to see films in Vermont, Margo?
Sure. I mean, I feel like we have a lot of theaters, including our multiplexes, most of which have been around for quite a while. The Savoy Theater in Montpelier is a great place that has just kept going through the decades.
How about you, Mark?
I was really surprised this year with talking about the multiplexes with the Essex Cinema did bring the Green Mountain Film Festival expanded from Montpelier to that theater, which I thought was a great addition. We do have those. The Roxy downtown, of course, is great. And the theater at Main Street Landing that plays the Vermont International Film Festival films, the largest screen in downtown Burlington, and definitely a place that you can just go and hang out and see a number of films.
Great points. Mark, now Netflix has some movies that got a very limited release in theaters. Then they're streamed. I'm thinking of Buster Scruggs, Shirkers, for instance. Will we see more of this? Is this a trend that is really on the rise?
Absolutely, I think. Maybe if you're a purist, you might scoff at that. For me, it's really about access. The more films that we can get in front of audiences, I think, is a positive thing. And with a company like Netflix, they are bound to purchase more films and release them this way. I just hope they'll continue to support the theatrical experience.
All right, Margo, let's get another pick from you, a movie you want to talk about 2018 that you enjoyed or didn't enjoy. Give it to us.
Well, another of my favorites was Eighth Grade, which is one of those. It's an indie movie about a classic indie topic, coming of age. But I thought it was different. It's very raw. It's very real. Elsie Fisher plays an eighth grader, as you can tell from the title, who is going through a difficult period. She's very shy. She's making YouTube videos in which she tries to advise other kids about how not to be shy and make friends. And so there's a sort of a real irony there. And I found this film, it just brought up so much stuff from my own childhood. And I think a lot of people will relate to it, despite the role of modern technology in it.
How about you, Mark?
I loved Eighth Grade. It's a great pick, Mark. Margo, I guess I'd have to go. I'm going to go back to a genre film. I really enjoyed Mandy from this year. This is a second-time director, Panos Cosmatos. This was another simul release within theaters and on streaming platforms. You did have to rent it. And it stars Nicolas Cage, Andrea Riseborough, and it's really just really seemed to capture the critical buzz, surprisingly, because it is a genre film, but it really is a mashup of genre films. Very slow in the beginning and methodical, and gets, as you might expect with a Nicolas Cage film, really crazy at the end.
So yeah, tell me about that a little bit more about the plot.
The film itself is about this couple that is I just say there's violence that happens, and it's a revenge tale. A couple of my favorite movies, this film had to do with revenge, and you see some animation scenes in there. It's very violent, so just want to mention that for audiences that do seek it out. But the look and feel of the film, it almost makes you feel like you're in a dream in some sequences.
Well, you both mentioned Eighth Grade, and Anna St. Marie, who is VPR's Audience Services Associate, agrees. She wrote, "This year I discovered my love for the independent film company A24. What I love about A24 is that their films have very little plot and focus sharply on character development. Two of the big releases this year were Eighth Grade, which is about an eighth grade girl as she navigates social media and the transition from middle to high school, and Mid-90s, which is about a boy trying to fit in with a group of rebellious skater kids. I also highly recommend A24's Lady Bird, The Florida Project, and The Disaster Artist, which were my favorite films of 2017. And each of those 2017 films, I really enjoyed. Lady Bird, Florida Project, and Disaster Artist. Any other indie films you want to throw out, Margo?
Another A24 one. Yeah. I think it was last year. A Ghost Story was a real favorite of mine. It's a very strange movie.
It is strange.
very compelling, and it's really a movie about mortality as opposed to a horror movie about ghosts.
Yeah, that was one that left me wondering at the end. I'll just say that. Okay, I'm sitting in the director's chair today as Vermont Edition has gone Hollywood. It's all about movies, flicks, films, indies, docs, and shorts, and whatever cinema topics you're interested in talking about. With me are Margo Harrison, a film reviewer for 7 Days, and Mark Herney, who podcasts at CriterionCast.com. Let's take a call from Bill in Montpelier. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Good. What's your recommendations?
So I have a couple of recommendations. I saw Three Identical Strangers, which is a documentary about three infant boys separated at birth around 1960 or so, and who got back together again around 1980 in college. It's a really interesting film. And also I saw Bad Times at the El Royale, which is a Jeff Bridges movie, which takes place in like 1969 at a rundown hotel in Lake Tahoe, I think. just really interesting to see that in the theater. There's some surprising moments that I don't think you'd get watching it on the small screen. It's one of the things that about the big screen that it's just, you know, hard to beat. So
love to hear
my call.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. How about Vince from Craftsbury Commons? Go ahead, Vince. What are your recommendations?
Hi, Rick and Mark and Margo. I wanted to take this opportunity to plug our film, Farmer of the Year, which is screening at local theaters now. We're Vermont filmmakers, and we have a feature film called Farmer of the Year. In fact, Margo, I think you reviewed it in 7 days.
I did. I thought it, I really enjoyed it.
Vince, are you one of the filmmakers?
Yeah, one of the producer, director, editor. So, yeah, we're screening theatrically, and we're also screening at the Capitol in Montpelier in January, as well as the Highland Center for the Arts and Marquee in Middlebury.
All right, and give us just, you know, the 10-second recap of what the movie's all about.
All right. It's Kathy wrote it, my wife. She's from Minnesota. It's about an old farmer. He sells his farm. He's at real loose ends. He ends up going on a road trip to his World War II reunion with his equally at loose ends granddaughter. Mm. And things that happen along the way, how the relationship develops. And it's a drama with embedded comedy. And so we try to imbue it with a real low-key tone and a very low arc. But, you know, it's still we like to think it's a compelling story.
Excellent. Vince, thanks for sharing it. It's called Farmer of the Year. All right, I'm going to turn back to you, Mark, and Margo, let's get some more picks. Mark, you first this time.
Well, it's funny, a lot of the films that I really enjoyed this year have already been mentioned. I'll go back to another revenge tale that I think is a lot less seen. It's a French film released in 2017 called Revenge. I really am enjoying how many more female filmmakers we have in the landscape now. And so this is another one that I really wanted to champion. It's a Coralie Farragut who directed it. It's again, revenge tale, very stylized, again, very violent, just keeping that in mind. But I think just really some scenes in some long takes that will stick with me for sometime. The director's pitch for the movie was Kill Bill mixed with Deliverance. Mm. So if that grabs you, it's worth seeing.
All right. Another pick from you, Margo.
Black Klansman, I think, is a movie we're going to be hearing more about as we get into award season this year. It had a good run at the Roxy. And this is Spike Lee coming back with a movie that is about race in America and is also really entertaining. I mean, it's kind of a story of con artistry in a way, but a con for good.
And we are seeing more, aren't we, African-American filmmakers really addressing racial issues now?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry to Bother You is another one that we saw this year. Kind of a surreal, really out there movie. I really enjoyed it.
That includes a Vermonter. Michael Summers of Middlebury plays Johnny in that film that you just mentioned. All right, let's see now. We have another call. Andrew's from Williston. Andrew, go right ahead.
Yeah, this is an old classic that I stumbled across at Essex Cinemas way back when, back in the 70s, called The Blues Brothers. And I never even heard of it. I dropped in there to watch it, and boy, what an awesome movie that was.
Oh, that's a great one.
There's probably 30 people in there, and I bought it, and I've watched it probably a dozen times since then. It's just amazing. All the car chases, that was just a cap that was unbelievable. The music and the dancing and the car chase at the end is just incredible. I loved it. It's awesome.
Well, let's turn the clock back and you know, look back at some films maybe that from the past. I think you just mentioned one, Mark. This year I rewatched Being There, one of my all-time favorites. I wanted to see if it held up. It did. Thank you, Jerzy Kaczynski. And I watched for the first time a documentary on Basquiat, The Radiant Child, which I just absolutely loved. Had some archival footage, interviews, and him painting. Any old ones that you go back and see and say, oh my gosh, I love this so much, or I've forgotten about it? Margo?
I rewatched The Haunting, which was one of my favorite movies, because it's from 1962, I believe, because I had just read Shirley Jackson's novel, The Haunting of Hill House. And of course, Netflix just this year put out a series that is really, really loosely based, let's say inspired by that story. But the original 1962 movie is great.
How about you, Mark?
Well, I feel like I need this year to champion Ingmar Bergman. It's his 100th year, and we just he has passed, but he would have turned 100 this year, and the Criterion Collection released a large box set of most of his films. He's certainly a daunting director, or kind of a titan of art house cinema from Sweden. So if you're looking to maybe consider something from him, if you've ever seen the scene of a man playing death with chess with death, that is a Seventh Seal, or maybe Wild Strawberries is a good place to start.
Now, I think there will be around 700 films released this year. I'm throwing out a number that I think is about accurate. So how do you sort out, you know, which ones you want to watch this year? Like you mentioned, you see somewhere between 70 and 100, each of you. Margo, how do you – some are probably assigned to you by 7 days. But when it's your turn to pick a film, how do you determine what you want to see?
Often it's the director. If I know I like that director's work, I want to see more. Often it's just the buzz that I've seen online, discussion I've seen online about it. Sometimes I will watch something because people are saying that it's likely to get awards, and that just makes you curious. You want to judge and see for yourself.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
For me, it's very similar that I'll follow a director when it's something or an actor or an actress for a new film. For looking at older films, I think it's really if I'm going to pick something that I want to revisit or something new, maybe I'll go through an entire director's filmography, or it has a Criterion Collection Blu-ray release, kind of rediscovering a film. Like, haven't seen it yet, but Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind was released on Netflix, which I think sets a new precedent for classic film being found and re-released.
The recommendations are still coming in. We've got Anne from Putney. Hi, Anne. What did you love this year?
Oh, the Bohemian Rhapsody. The performance by Rami Malek was just outstanding. I saw it twice.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now, I think both of you give this a thumbs up. Is that right?
I actually did not love this movie.
No kidding.
I love Rami Malek. It's great in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good actor. I did not love the approach that they took to the movie. I found it, I admit, a little bit corny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the ideal audience for it.
And Mark, you also kind of gave it a so-so.
A little bit mixed. I think the film itself is a lot of fun, and I can see why audiences love it. It does check a lot of boxes. It gives you the little bits and pieces as to how each popular song may have come to be, but it's a little bit contrived. But that last scene, the Live Aid, is really demands to be seen on a big screen.
I will admit, I got to see Queen live in concert once, and it was probably the most beautiful rock concert I've ever seen in my entire life. All right, we're almost out of time. Just a quick couple of films, just throw them out. Mark, go.
The Writer, that is a small film that it really is with non-professional actors, with the people that were involved. And I'll say A Quiet Place is another thriller.
Margo?
If you like thrillers, I suggest searching out Searching, and Thoroughbreds is another really good movie that wasn't in theaters long.
Oh, this was so great. Margo Harrison, film reviewer and associate editor for 7 Days, and Mark Herney, podcast at CriterionCast.com. He's also a member of the Vermont International Film Foundation. I want to thank you so much for a great hour. This was a lot of fun.
It was awesome.
Thanks
for having us.
Thanks for having us.